to see me through. Good afternoon, and welcome to Loved with Kim Sage on KX at One Laguna in beautiful and sunny Laguna Beach today. I'm your host, Kim Sage, and I'm a therapist in Newport Beach and currently completing my doctorate in clinical psychology. Loved with Kim Sage is a show about love and relationships, and you can always tweet me any questions or show ideas at K-Sage Psychology. That's K-S-A-G-E Psychology. So recently, I was having a conversation with a great friend of mine who also happens to be a therapist, and we were just having our sort of normal, oh my gosh, parenting is so hard conversation when it hit me that, okay, this would be an amazing concept to have on our show, because two therapists talking about their parenting struggles is actually at times a funny conversation. I've always felt that when you hear these titles of people call themselves parenting expert, that's really an oxymoron, because I just rarely trust anyone who tells me that they're an expert or a guru, and that things have to be done a certain way. Because you know what? If it was that simple as just stop doing that or just do it this way, life would be a breeze and we wouldn't even need an expert in the first place. So it just doesn't work that way for me. I just never trust any professional who tells me they have all the answers and says things like, well, here's what you should do, or here's what you need to do. You should run if someone tells you that in therapy. But with that said, I do believe that now we actually, you know, there's so much incredible knowledge and just a huge research supported base of information about parenting and parenting strategies. And we know that these things can actually change the way people experience themselves and the way their kids experience them as parents. So I think people who study parenting academically would be better off called parenting collaborators or parenting strategists, because the reality is that every child is different from every other child, and every parent is different from every other parent. And really more importantly, I think our kids are always changing and we're always changing. And so there's this evolution for both of us. And I think that's why it's so difficult. You know, it's kind of a moving target. They're moving and we're moving. And that makes it super challenging. And I think if you ask anyone who has more than one child, they will probably tell you that what works for one child does not work for another child. And, you know, if your child has any kind of special needs that need to be addressed or they don't fit inside the quote unquote box, it definitely makes it that much harder. How we parent, I think, depends on kind of where we are in our own lives. So given any day, you know, one day the behavior is entertaining and you might be laughing at it. And the next day, you know, you're going crazy. It's something that you don't want to see your kids keep doing. And if you're having a tough day, it's just that much tougher to be the parent that you really want to be. So, you know, the reality is that parenting is really, really hard. And it can also be, I think, just incredible and beautiful and rewarding and something that, you know, I wouldn't trade anything for. So where does that leave us? I think that leaves us with the idea that every day is really a chance to be the parent that you want to be. Every day is a new start. And this is sort of off topic slightly, but I do believe that the way that you parent your children can be so healing for you, for your own parenting, when you get to parent the way you wanted to be parented and that you didn't get. I think that's just huge. And I've watched people really experience their lives differently through that. And that's a whole other show topic, so we're not going to go into that today. But just think about that idea, and it's important. So the reality is, I think that when we're really honest about our struggles as parents, it makes us stronger. People tend to think they have to do it perfectly. And I think it's also helpful when you have knowledge. So being real about it and having knowledge, I think, are helpful concepts. And so after that long intro, that brings me to my dear friend, who's also a therapist and is joining me on the show today. Her name is Janine Nicole, and she has a master's in marriage and family therapy, and she's transitioning into private practice right now. And we're just going to have a conversation about parenting. So welcome, Janine.
Thank you, Kim. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for asking me to join you.
I'm so happy you're here. So one of the topics I want to discuss today, and I hope really permeates the show, is this whole idea around good enough parenting. Mm-hmm. You hear this all the time.
Yes. No, that's a hard one.
Yeah, definitely.
Never feel good enough often when right. you're in the trenches parenting.
Definitely. And I think we're always, you know, judging ourselves. But the idea of good enough parenting really came from a guy named Donald Winnicott, mm-hmm. who I'm sure you're familiar with. For those who don't know, he was a pediatrician and a psychoanalyst, and he really sort of started studying women and their children. Mm-hmm. And this idea of that being a good enough mother really means being a real mother. Mm-hmm. So the idea behind his theory is that you don't have to be perfect, that you're not a goddess who functions in some untouchable perfection, but really a gardener to your children who tends to her child by nurturing and pruning, and I think sometimes actually letting some weeds grow next to your children before you rip them out of the garden. You know, the goal is that you have your child's best interest at heart, but you're not trying to shield them from every single pain in the world, including those that actually come from you. You know, Winnicott believed that children need love and security, but that they also need to learn that they are not the center of the universe. Mm. Shocker. And that life is filled with imperfections and disappointments and frustrations. So curious, what Janine, what are your thoughts about what a real mother is?
Wow, what a great question. A real mother is, I think, in my opinion, someone that loves their kids, does the best that we can daily, very imperfectly, as you said. I think it's a beautiful analogy, as you said, that sometimes it's okay that your kids stumble or that those weeds grow. So sometimes I think for myself, and I hear this with other moms, there is a lot of perfectionism that I want to do it perfectly so I don't cause them pain or possibly ruin the child, which right. is probably pretty hard to do, but right. that fear is real.
Definitely. Yeah, I think our culture, and this is my concern about everybody being a parenting expert or mm-hmm. frankly, any of these relational issues, you know, I think it's important information, but the standards sometimes get so high that on a daily basis, it's hard to achieve, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. And I think even, you know, being a therapist, the challenge is in your head, you know, all the shoulds, you know, even we say we shouldn't. And that can be challenging. I think that's what makes our conversation so interesting because theoretically we have the knowledge, but it's also really important to be able to just be honest about where your struggles are.
Yes. And it's so comforting to know that I'm not the only one, whether it's with you or with other girlfriends that may be struggling academically with a child or my own patients. Just there's so many realms that we attend to. And I know it quells my anxiety when I realize I'm not the only one struggling with some of these issues.
Definitely. You know, you're not alone. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's huge. None of us have this manual and license in the world about how to be perfect parents. You know, we're all right. just getting up. I think most of us are getting up every day and doing the best we can. And some days we can sit back and say, wow, you know, I nailed that today. Mm-hmm. And some days we just think, oh, no, I could have done so much better. But that's the reality of it. You know, yeah. it's challenging.
Absolutely. And it's being human and it's imperfect. And there's often lessons to be learned in some of the stumbles I find. you know, if I can with my kids, if I did something imperfectly, to be able to apologize or to talk about it and learn. And I so believe that we're role models. So if I'm not too hard on myself, I think with my kids, I'm being a role model of being gentle, and it is okay to be imperfect.
Definitely. I mean, you always hear they watch so much more than what you say. Mm-hmm. You know, they really do watch what you do and not just what you say. I think the other thing is that we're so worried about what other people think about our parenting. Mm-hmm. You know, in this society and culture where there is so much judgment, how do you think, or what are your thoughts about moms with those feelings about, okay, I do it this way, but what's someone else going to think about what I'm doing?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I do think that today there's such high expectations, right? Different than 20 years ago.
Definitely.
I have found that there's this expectation, is your child a straight A student and doing piano and having concerts and being the captain of the football team? I mean, those expectations are huge. So I know for myself, I try to have acceptance that to know myself and know our family, that I'm mindful of carving out having some downtime, mm-hmm. and not running like crazy, because everyone gets very stressed. So I think for myself, just realizing that there's no one way of doing it, and that what works for one family or one mother may be very different than what works for me, and trying to have acceptance and not a lot of judgment.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I do. You mentioned stress, and I think mm-hmm. our kids are more stressed out than they've ever been before. Mm-hmm. Just the amount of electronics, and like you mentioned, outside activities they're supposed to participate in, and then us getting them to those activities, yes. You know, and just the amount of, did you do your homework, and measuring your homework. And there is that helicopter factor that I struggle with. Is this really what's best for our kids? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think about that?
Personally, I think that the bit of research I've looked at over the last few years is that the documentary Race to Nowhere, where they taught there, it's focused exactly on this, of the intense pressure with academics and those outside activities, getting into the best universities. What is this really providing for our kids? And some of the research that I looked at recently came back to say that we are actually, this generation over the last 15 years, they're having higher incidence of depression, anxiety. And what was fascinating is a lack of compassion.
Wow.
And I think the lack of compassion may come from the competitiveness that right. you have to step over the other person. And I don't think that's good long term in terms of happiness and well-being. So it's something I just personally try to be very mindful of.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that lacking compassion and empathy is really a fracture in our society when you stop really thinking about, okay, how does this impact me, but also how does it impact other people? What's the reaction going to be from my action? Mm-hmm. And if it's a win at all costs philosophy, I just wonder what that sets our kids up for. You know, what kind of goals and value systems are they going to have when that's all they're fed?
Yes.
You
know? No, I agree. And wanting my child, I think about this too. What do I want for my children as they're grown up? Well, I want them to do meaningful work and enjoy it. I want them to have happiness and peace, and be productive, not stressed out, anxiety ridden, depressed, and just focused on, I don't know, what is it? Focused on money, right. success.
I agree. Yeah, and I think it's also important too, and this has been, you know, as a parent of four children, a struggle, mm-hmm. embracing your children. What do they want? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not my plan for you, it's your plan for you. Mm-hmm. And embracing the children that you receive, which are not always the ones that you fantasized about when you left the baby store, you
right.
know?
Good point.
And so I think, especially as, you know, getting, as they get older in the teen years, it may not be the dream that you had for them, but that's okay. And how do you get out of your own way so you can embrace that? That's difficult. I think it's difficult for almost everyone I've talked to about parenting.
Yes, no, I agree. I was speaking to a parent just recently, yesterday, about accepting like those differences, that your child may not be the person that you fantasized when they were a little toddler. Mm-hmm. And how do you accept that and love them for who they are and foster that? Because I think children really do they benefit greatly from a parent just loving them for exactly who they are, which may be very different from our expectation or from ourselves.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think it starts to reveal itself as they get older. Mm-hmm. You know, you see those seeds in the time they're in the crib and they begin to, like, you know, it's like an onion. They're peeling back these layers of who they're going to be. And some of them you go, yay, that's what I wanted. And some you go, oh, okay. You know, wasn't expecting that one, but that's okay. I just have to shift my perspective.
Exactly. And expectations and just love them for who they are.
Yeah.
I think they really do benefit from that.
I agree. And that's a great place to take a break. So loving them for who they are. We're going to take a quick break. For those of you listening today, you're listening to KX at One Laguna, the show Loved with Kim Sage. And we're just talking about, you know, being a good enough parent with Janine Nicole.
Money. Some people so poor all that they got is money. Oh, and diamonds. Some people waste their life counting their thousands. I don't care what they're offering, how much gold they bring. They can't afford what we had. Not even the king. They can't afford what we got. Not even the king. Oh, castles. Some people so lonely. What good is a castle surrounded by people but ain't got a friend that's not on the payroll? For what we got, not even the king. I can't afford what we got, not even the king. All the king's horses and all the king's men came charging to get what we got. They offered the crown and they offered the throne, but I already got all that I want. King's horses and all the king's men, they came marching through. They offered the world just to have what we got, but I found the world in you. I found the world in you. So darling, listen. Your arms around me worth more than a kingdom. Yeah, the trust that we feel, the kings never felt that. Yeah, this is the song we sing. We don't need anything. They can't afford this. This is priceless. Can't afford what we got. Not even the king. Can't afford what we got, not even a king.
And welcome back. That was Alicia Keys on a song called Not Even the King, which I know she wrote for her son. I just thought it was a beautiful song choice for us today. So I'd like to remind our audience that you are listening to Loved with Kim Sage on KX at One Laguna. And today we are talking with therapist Janine Nicole about the idea of good enough parenting. Before the break, we were talking about, you know, just loving our kids for who they are. And I think we have to love ourselves for who we are, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it does really start with us. Actually, I wanted to share one of my most favorite quotes by Naomi Wolf, which speaks to this. And her quote is, a mother who radiates self-love and self-acceptance actually vaccinates her daughter or children against low self-esteem. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that.
Had you ever heard that before?
I think I've heard something similar, but not that exact quote. That's really lovely. Yeah, I think it's so important, but I think all of us are fighting that battle. How do we love ourselves for who we are? And it's not like you just, I nailed it. I'm good with that.
Right. I think it's a process, right? A journey from when we were young girls and over time as you mature and grow. And hopefully that self-esteem grows with us as we age.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think what often gets in the way of that is that inner critic in our head, you know, going back to the idea of telling us that if it's not perfect, it's not enough.
Right.
And so what role do you think perfectionism and even control issues play in parenting?
Mm. Wow. You know, that reminds me when my kids were very young, and I am a recovering perfectionist, I like to say and laugh about, that I've gotten a lot better with it, that it's very painful, I think, being a parent if you are super controlling and super perfectionistic. And I feel like with the children, I've had to kind of let that go, that it is okay to have it be imperfect. And sometimes there's beauty in that imperfection. And especially as they get older, you do lack control. I mean, once they go off to school and you have less and less of that daily control over the kids.
Definitely. I think that's difficult. And, you know, that idea of messy, I think living with messy and living in chaos, it's actually okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say that I used to believe that if everything looked perfect on the outside, like the house was picked up and everything was in order, that somehow reflected the inside. And the truth is, you have to be able to step over stuff sometimes and just keep going, you know?
Yes.
But I think having it all look perfect, including your home when you have a bunch of children or even just one, I mean, it doesn't take much for mess to occur.
Right.
What are your thoughts about living with messy?
You know, I think it's healthy. I think it is okay and healthy that the kids get to be kids and play and make forts in the family room and tear it apart. I love that creativity of whether using boxes or pieces of the sofa. We would tend to straighten up, you know, at the end of the day, just so it wasn't sheer chaos, but... Right. But I think there is great value in actually creativity sometimes in letting kids be kids. I knew a woman years ago who was so perfectionistic that the kids could not sit on the sofa.
Oh, wow.
Right. And I think that doesn't bode well for the children, that it's too rigid.
I agree. It's like almost why they even exist, you know, make it so you don't even actually look like you exist here.
Right.
I mean, imagine what that feels like inside when that's the subtle mess that you're getting is, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, like our grandparents in the 50s and the plastic on the couches.
Oh.
You know, it's like, you're going to die someday and all this stuff is, none of it's going with you,
right.
You know? But yeah, I think that would be sad to imagine that, you know. The kids matter. They need to know that they matter.
Yes. And to live fully, like enjoy. And I think living sometimes can be messy, right?
Definitely.
When you are out there exploring, being adventurous. Even here's another thought of in preschool. Like I remember some of the moms not wanting their kids to get dirty. And I remember thinking, it's okay. Go play in the mud. I mean, we're not going off to the ballet where they need to be clean. Let them be kids.
Right. It's
get
preschool.
Get their hands dirty. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Although I do have to say after three boys and a girl at the end with all the pretty outfits, I would sometimes have to remind myself that it was okay. No, I agree. I think that that's the reality, but that's just sometimes not the world we live in, you know?
Yeah.
So accepting that, you know, nobody wants to be in total chaos and mess. And studies do show that organization and things like that do add to a sense of well-being and those things. But I think it's just cutting yourself some slack that some days it's going to be like that and hopefully some days it won't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That brings me to the idea of balance.
Mm.
I think this is a topic that everyone is always talking about. What does that mean to you, balance?
Mm. You know, I love the word balance. And even when we were just talking about the last piece of the kids being dirty in the house, being chaotic, there is a sense of balance. As I said, that in the evening I would straighten up as everyone went to bed, that there was some order and routine. But it's that living in the gray or in the middle which for myself, it goes to taking care of myself, keeping the household in balance. Gosh, it has so much meaning. I could talk about it for an hour, but it is something that I strive for. It doesn't have to be perfect, but to keep centered, grounded, and balance, I equate that with kind of peace and enjoyment, that when it's super out of balance, there's, I associate it with discord and not feeling centered, not feeling peaceful.
No, I think that makes sense. And I think that's hard to achieve in the world we live in today, mm-hmm. you know, is how much is enough and where do we say no? And I had a guest last week, we were talking about parenting, and I asked her sort of a question about this. And she said, you know, I started saying no more, not saying yes, I'll do that. Yes, I can run the PTA. Yes, I can handle that job. Yes, I can go to the market. You know, I think as women, we're often conditioned to just, we can handle it all. And you cannot be in balance when you're doing everything. You can't.
Oh, absolutely. And the strength and willingness and courage to say no. Again, when my kids were younger, I did say yes to a lot of things, the PTA, volunteering, and I was out of balance and not very happy and not enjoying my kids.
Yeah.
And I think today I try to really be mindful of that. Can I say yes to this? Will it be adding to the well-being of everyone, or will it be detracting if I'm cranky and overtaxed, overstressed?
Definitely. It's very hard to make the environment enjoyable for anyone when you're not in a good space.
Yes.
So I think knowing when to say yes and when to say no is really important.
And I do think that goes back to self-esteem in my experience, that as I'm feeling better about who I am and comfortable in my skin as a woman and as a mom, I've gotten better at it's okay to say no and not have guilt around it, and to just be okay with it.
Oh, that was such a great segue to my next topic, which was mommy guilt.
Ah!
You read my mind.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was actually perfect. Yeah, I think the mom guilt, I don't know about the dad guilt. I can only speak for myself as a woman. I'm sure I know it exists. Everybody has their standard and their ideal. But I think we hear a lot about mommy guilt because we're feeling it a lot.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I hate mommy guilt. It does not feel good.
No.
I don't think anyone benefits from it. But maybe, again, it goes back to being human and kind of, sometimes we feel guilty when we don't do our best. I think overall, you know, I'm a pretty present parent and take care of my kids' needs and so forth. But what made me think of this is one day at early pickup, I just didn't have it in my calendar, and I was late for my youngest daughter, who was in third grade. I cannot tell you how awful I felt. She was pretty much fine.
I was about you.
Horrified.
Right.
And it took a good day to shake it, and talking to friends of it just, I felt like I failed that day.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy that you just miss one pickup?
I mean, right.
The hundreds of pickups you've made
over the years.
Yes. That's that thing where we, you know, we get that compliment for 50 things, but we hear one negative and that's all we focus on. Right? It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just being human.
Yeah, I do. I think that, around the momming issue, mm-hmm. there's definitely an extra layer. And even whether it's the work moms or the stay-at-home moms, you know, we get in this area where everyone is trying to balance so many things, and then there comes in this judgment piece where we should be able to do it all, and we just can't.
Right.
Even with the items to bring for school, I don't know about you, but the holidays, you know, it's like the teacher gifts and the this and the that. I mean, every parent I know is so stressed out.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah, it's a lot. The other topic I wanted to talk to you about, which we were actually having the conversation about when I got the idea for the show recently, was about having a teenager or, you know, reaching that high school stage and just developmentally what's happening in adolescence. Mm. What's that been like for you?
Well, I'm pretty new into it. My daughter's 13, but I've noticed over the last year, the amount of the emotional roller coaster mm-hmm. can be very exhausting. and I try to be accepting and be supportive and so forth, but it is quite different. The intensity of the emotions. And then I've also noticed that in middle school, there's so many realms to kind of check in with the child on. You have the academic realm, the social realm, the physically, are they getting enough sleep? Are they getting enough vegetables? Right. I mean, some days it's quite overwhelming. It's very different and new and different than when they were little.
Yeah, definitely. Middle school, I was just talking actually to our pediatrician the other day, and she was saying, you know, it used to be, or it should be really, that middle school is an extension of elementary. Mm. But instead, we were discussing, it's like a mini high school. Mm. You know, and I think a lot of kids just aren't ready for that. When it pops up in sixth grade, it's actually pretty young to have that many responsibilities and teachers. And then they get to high school, and that's just a whole other level. It's difficult.
Yeah. Did you notice a big change from middle school to high school with your oldest child?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, that they're sort of preparing them in terms of the different teachers, and it's really your responsibility to handle things as the child. But high school is a whole other level, you know, and the pressure associated with, okay, now you're a sophomore and now you're supposed to get ready for the SATs and college, and what do you want to do and what do you want to be? And I just don't think most kids, I think there's a rare number of kids who know what they want to do from a very early time on. But I think the majority of people that I've met don't really know. It's an unfolding, you know, I like this thing, I'm passionate about here or there. But the pressure to sort of know it and achieve it and get your resume, I mean, it's crazy the competitiveness for college these days.
Wow. And that does seem insane to expect a 15 or 16 year old to know who they want to be and what they want to do when they grow up. I agree with you that I think it is rare for those few children that really know they're going to be a golfer or be an actor.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I can only speak for myself, but the whole idea of their need for autonomy and pushing away from you and their need to be protected. And that, talk about balance, is how do you manage between, okay, I want you to be able to learn to be to take care of yourself, but not throw you out there on your own at a time when they really think they know it all. They're like, I'm good, I'm done, I figured it out. You know, we've all been there. I have not met one person that hasn't said, oh gosh, I remember this, my poor mother during those teenage years, you know.
Right.
So that is really also something I didn't expect. Just how much do you say yes? How much do you say no? And then always keeping your mind on and your eye on what's changing. Mm. And it changes frequently.
Yeah. I bet it is kind of like walking along a tightrope. You know.
Yeah. It's difficult territory. No question. And that's the conversation I've been having with a lot of parents, because my oldest is almost 16.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone tells you, oh, you just wait till you get a teenager. And you're like, yeah. You know, I'm just getting past the baby stage. I just want to be able to get him out of diapers and not manage everything. But it's a whole new level of hard, you know, that I think really parents need support on. Really do believe that.
Yes, yes. And that ever, as you were saying, the kids, I've often marveled at, you're at a stage and you feel like, oh, I can kind of do this as a parent. And then the child goes and changes.
Yes.
It's like, wait. Now I don't have my ship legs. How do we do this? It's amazing, isn't it? How it's always evolving and shifting. And it's anxiety provoking some days.
No question. Yeah, you're like, okay, I got this. I'm good. I know how to handle this one. And then something new comes up. And that's really also a time when they're supposed to be not sharing as much with you. You know, they really go towards their peers. And it's difficult. Even if you had a kid who was really close to you and shared a lot, sometimes they just don't want to. And you have to also try to respect that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, be a detective and figure out, do I need to get involved here? Do I need to back off here? And that makes it difficult.
Yeah, very challenging. I find it so comforting, though, speaking with other parents about that everyone's trying to figure this out, especially with our first kids. I would imagine it gets a little easier when you're a child two or three going through the teenage years. But
definitely. Yeah, and I think electronics and our sort of technology has opened up a whole new can of worms in terms of us being able to know what our kids are doing at every moment, at every time. And as a therapist, I don't know about you, but I struggle with that. You know, do we really need to know their inner thoughts and every single moment they're doing everything?
Mm.
We didn't have that.
Right.
You know, and I understand the safety factor and I struggle with it, but I've seen parents that are just they're on top of their kids to the point where there's no room to breathe. And I don't know. It makes me question. We want our kids to be safe, but what's the cost they pay? What's the price they pay? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. No, I understand the instinct as a parent because it's frightening, right? Yeah. You want to be in there monitoring, controlling, but I do think it stifles them. And I think that these teenage years, they are preparing developmentally to launch and go out into the world on their own. And it goes back to, I think, of going back to that balance. If you're too stifling and monitoring everything, who knows if they will react in a negative way to it. And if you're hands off and there's no curfews, no boundaries, no rules, that's not good either. I think it goes back to doing our best, or for myself, my best, to strive for the center, the balance, to be aware, but to give them autonomy.
I totally agree. I think we're back to that balance word again, mm-hmm. you know, is trying to find the middle ground mm-hmm. between being involved and being present and also allowing them to become the people they're meant to become.
Yes. And yeah. I think too that there's that process of maybe they make a poor decision, that there are consequences, but they're still under our roofs where we can help them walk through that and hopefully learn from it. Because once they're off in college, I mean, there's not that safety net of parents to kind of help them through and maybe see what lessons or what decisions they could have made differently. So I almost feel like the teenage years are kind of that platform getting ready to launch and be off on their own. And that it's okay sometimes that they may stumble, yeah. that we're there to help them. What is the life lesson? What can you learn from this?
I definitely agree. I think it's an opportunity for growth, you yes. know, when you're there to guide them and to sort of help them figure out who they want to become. Mm-hmm. And you're right. In some ways, if you make mistakes when you're still at home, not hopefully crazy ones, right. but enough to where there's room to grow from and a consequence here or there where, okay, who do I want to be? It's mm-hmm. a moment. It's a fork in the road for them sometimes. Right. And that's not always a bad thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the perfectionism. Sometimes I think that, well, there should be no bumps in the road, that some people have children that get straight A's or perfect in every way. And that doesn't exist. It's fantasy.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I thought it would also be good for us to sort of throw in our therapist 2 cents, given what we've studied and what we know and what we've experienced. And so I thought it would be good for us to talk about just a couple topics before we hit the last segment of the show mm-hmm. around some of those really key things. There's so many we could go over. I could do, you know, we could do 10 shows on just the things that we've read or we've heard about or we've tried. But I think the really thing for me, there's a couple things. One is that in this day and age, everyone is talking about being present with your kids. Mm-hmm. And in terms of how you do that, there are lots of different ways to do that. What that really means is that we are allowing ourselves to sort of regard our lives as we're experiencing the moments, mm-hmm. we're actually in the moments mm-hmm. that are happening to us. You know, we're not next week. We're not back in last year. We're really trying to be present and be in that moment. How do you do that with your kids?
Great question. For me, it starts with myself and meditating in the morning. I try to give myself some quiet time. And then again, that mindfulness of when I'm with the kids, to have my cell phone in the other room so I'm not checking text messages. Meal time, we have a rule, no electronics in the kitchen so we can really connect with each other. And I think it is kind of a practice because life is so hectic and it is so easy to be thinking about what do I have this evening or next week. And I try to be aware of the moment and being present and enjoying the moment with them because the last, 12 years of since I had my first child has gone so quickly. So I want to savor and be present for the good and the bad. So for myself, meditating in the morning helps and being mindful of it, of protecting that time with them and being really there connecting when we're together.
Yeah, I think it's important to set boundaries around that. You're mm-hmm. right about setting a family rule about no electronics at the table or having dinner together. My last yes. guest was talking about having dinner together, which I think is huge. It's not always the most pleasant experience.
Isn't that true?
You know, I think people have this fantasy about what dinner hour is like, some Rockwell painting, and sometimes I just want to get through it. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, and other times it's like great and we're laughing and chatting. And I think being realistic about that is really important.
Yes.
Because I have a lot of clients who tell me, oh, are you kidding me? Did I have to sit through a whole dinner with my kids? I'm like, yeah, turn off the TV, you know, sit down and ask them about their day. And it can be difficult, especially when we're struggling. So
absolutely.
I love the meditation. I love meditating. My kids are always making fun of our crunchy meditating conversations. But it's changed my life. No doubt about it. You know, just being present with myself and having just that quiet time. So I know that you do that as well. And that ties into the whole idea of self-care, which I know that you're a big fan of. What does self-care look like to you?
One of my favorite topics, especially is, I think, as a woman and a mother, where we give to the children, we run this household, we give and support to the husband. It can be quite exhausting. For me, self-care, as I mentioned, is meditation. I try to exercise several times a week, and that's not at the gym for me, but it's speed walking out at the beach or beautiful trails where I get to connect with nature and enjoy the physical beauty. Self-care is carving out and allowing, giving myself the gift of lunch with a girlfriend, because sometimes life gets so hectic and that to-do list is endless, right? I mean, I don't know that any woman ever feels like, oh, I'm all caught up.
Yeah, I'm good.
So exactly. So for me, it truly is like giving myself the gift of friendship time, going out with girlfriends for dinner or coffee with a girlfriend. Yeah, so those are kind of my main ones.
Those are great. Those are great examples. And as you and I were discussing earlier, that's the first thing we give up. You know, if we have a busy day ahead of us, it's like, okay, well, I don't have to meditate. I think that's how we start thinking in our heads. Mm-hmm. Because it is actually down to the minute by minute sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes we can't, you know. But I think prioritizing it helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it can be 2 or 3 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a 30-minute meditation
with
sometimes.
A candle.
Exactly.
And a music.
That was like before kids, right?
Right. That's your fantasy meditation.
Exactly. And some days it's in the car, turn the music off, mm-hmm. and just take a moment of being aware of my breath and calming down and being looking at the visual beauty of the ocean or whatever right. you're passing.
Even just noticing the colors on the highway and the freeway as you're driving past. Mm-hmm. It sounds crazy, but what's the concrete look like? What do the signs look like? What do you see in the sky?
Mm-hmm.
That grounding yourself, I think, is so important, because
yes.
I think we're a very anxiety-ridden culture, understandably so, you know, but these types of things really help to calm that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
So we're going to talk just briefly about Janine and I have a love of a guy named Dan Siegel. He is a guru. There's my word that I don't like, but he really is of what is called interpersonal neurobiology. And I am not going to go through the whole explanation of what that is today, because that's a whole other show. Mm-hmm. But he has a couple things. He has 2 tips in his books, and he has amazing books on parenting. The first one is called The Whole Brain Child for kids who are 0 to 12. And the next one is for 12 to the sort of mid-20s range, and it's called Brainstorm. I know you've read a lot of his stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to really have nothing to do with the books, but just really plug them. They're difficult to read at times. The material can be dense. I've done audiobook on them, so I highly recommend that while I'm out walking.
Yes.
So I can multitask my mommy time with that. But one of the techniques he talks about is this idea of repairing ruptures. Mm. So it really is, for those of you who don't know, it's sort of like, okay, he calls it the low road. When your child or you are going down the low road in that moment of emotion that in the end doesn't always feel so good. Oftentimes when we go down the low road, after it happens, we think, gosh, you know, I could handle that differently. What do I do about this now? And the idea is that, you know, going back in and modeling for your kids, when the time is calm and when everybody's sort of relaxed, you know, I really want to reconnect with you. I want to, if I need to apologize, apologize.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's huge for kids when they see us own our stuff, that we make it okay, that we're not perfect.
Yes.
And that we wish we had handled that differently.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about making repairs?
Oh, I love it. It's something that in our family that I advocate quite a bit, and it's nice to see the kids. It's pretty well ingrained where I see it, even with each other, with friends. So yes, going back to, we're imperfect. Sometimes I have hurt my children's feelings, or I've not handled something the way I'd like to. And I do own it. And I think it's so powerful of just saying, I'm really sorry I hurt your feelings and I wish I could have done it differently. And what is, you know, what can I do to help you feel better? Do you need a kiss? Do you need... and it is amazing because you're resolving that hurt and it is a repair and you move on. It doesn't collect of these unspoken hurts. And as you said, you're modeling for the kids. This is how you have relationships, whether mom and dad, you know, have conflict and how do they resolve it, or with the kids, girlfriends. I think it's the basis of good, healthy relating.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you said something so important. Mm-hmm. It helps release an accumulation of wounds. It's not this cumulative hurt that just gets bigger and bigger. You know, it can, obviously. But I think when you own something like that, it helps to sort of let the air out, you know, and start over again where you're not living in that space of woundedness and pain.
Yes, I think it's vital for the kids and well-being.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So in the books, you know, he's got some great books, Parenting from the Inside Out, which helps you look at your stuff because, you know, nothing triggers our own childhood stuff than being a parent and watching the things come out of your mouth that you swore you were never going to say or do with your own parents. So,
so true.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how that happens?
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yes.
And the other thing that Dan talks about that I love, and you know, all of this stuff is really about changing the neural pathways in our brains, mm-hmm. and that we have the actual ability to change those pathways by the way we function. He talks about this idea of when your children are having an emotional moment. So they're really crying or they're really upset, that when they're doing that, they're in their right brain. Mm. You know, they're in their emotional brain.
Right.
And so we come in, we can't come flying into the room with, what were you thinking? Why are you doing that? How did that happen? They're in that right brain and they literally can't even hear us. Even if we're calm and trying to be logical and in our problem solving mode, that we need to first meet them sort of right brain to right brain, connect with them, have empathy. Wow, I can see you're really sad, or I'm so sorry. Before we go in and even, you know, quote unquote discipline or try to restructure the experience, then the left brain can hear that, you know. Mm. But I think it changed my life when I realized that I could just embrace the emotion for what it was and lean into it,
right,
as opposed to try to, you know, shut it down as quickly as possible,
right,
because maybe it's triggering my own stuff about tearing up or crying or anger. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I love that. I'm not familiar with that piece of his work, but it resonates that, and it's not always easy as a parent, but to empathize and acknowledge that pain and that upset. And it makes perfect sense that then, is there a time frame? Is it 1 or 2 minutes? How do you know when the child is able to then go to the more rational? Do you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, normally I think it's when the emotion has sort of quelled.
Okay.
When they're, you know, the emotion has died down, they're not so locked into that, whatever's happening in that moment.
Okay.
Then you can begin to sort of talk about cognitively, okay, here's why you probably shouldn't throw a Thomas train at your brother,
right,
or whatever it is. Because in that moment, they can't hear us and we really want them to hear us. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what changes, I think, long-term behavior.
Yes.
But I think so many of us are conditioned and grew up this way where it's like, what are you doing? What were you thinking? Why are you doing that? You know, and those are, to be honest, as a parent, understandable questions,
right,
but they're not always helpful in that moment, you know, to help children sort of internalize what's happened and make changes in their own behavior.
Yeah, no, that's so true. What comes to my mind is I remember as a child, like, what are you crying about? I'll give you something to cry about.
Yes.
It's like, oh.
I know.
I love that this makes perfect sense, and that I would imagine that as you've been using it, don't you find that there's a lot more peace? Like you get to the solutions with the child quicker than here with the parents invalidating their emotions. The kid probably ramps up emotionally and the parents, oh, so it's very calming and finding a solution, I would imagine.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you just said. I think when we don't do that, sometimes our kids keep acting out in the emotion because they don't feel like we're getting it,
right?
So what's their motivation to sort of like calm themselves down? They are gonna sometimes ramp it up. So you're not getting how upset I am. You're not getting how hurt I am or how tired I am. Sometimes it's just being tired.
Oh yes.
You know, but their emotions are connected to that. So And God help us if we're having a hard day and that's going on. You know, that makes it, we're in our right brain and they're in their right brain. not so pretty.
Yeah, not at all.
So I highly recommend Dan's work. It's just incredible. It has changed the way I think about parenting, and certainly meditation and teaching our kids guided imagery and those kinds of things. So that just really brings us back to the whole idea of not being perfect. Mm. You know, that you can just, there are lots of different ways to get there to the kind of parent you want to be. You just have to shoot for good enough. You don't have to shoot for perfection.
Yes, and what a relief. I mean, actually, to me, it's like I can breathe more easily. Oh, good, I don't have to be perfect. Right?
Exactly.
Good enough.
Yeah, exactly. So before we head into our final segment, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Love with Kim Sage on KX at One Laguna. At the end of each interview, I have some questions for my guests, sort of in the James Lipton actor studio style. And we just have a couple minutes, but I would like to just ask Janine a few questions and get her answers. You know what these are, right?
A little familiar.
Okay. So the first question is, what word makes you smile?
Love.
Oh, that's a good one. What word makes you cringe?
Hate, because it's the basis for violence and destruction.
Where is your happy place?
With my kids and my family, being together, laughing.
What sound or noise do you love?
My kids kissing and being loving with each other, like being sweet and kind with each other, cuddling and nurturing.
That's a good one. What is the best? Oh, I'm sorry. What sound or, did I say what sound or noise do you hate? No.
No.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Oh. Gosh, that's a good one that I hate. Aggression, yelling, fighting.
Yeah.
I don't like fighting.
Me neither. I don't like that one. What is the best thing about being in a relationship with you?
Oh my gosh, what a question. I think I'm really loyal and genuine. Loyal.
That's a good one. If you only have an hour to yourself to do as you wish, what is your favorite thing to do?
Part of me would like to say curl up with a book, but that's not honest. The honest truth is snuggled up on the sofa watching mindless television like Nashville or Empire.
Oh my gosh, that was my answer. Yeah, the mindless TV. I don't like to admit that, but I, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes you need to not be in your
exactly
truth every moment, right?
And not thinking. I just need to turn the brain off.
Especially when you're a therapist, and people don't, you know, we're always about what's the other person saying, how can I help with that, and you really are on a lot.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes just being checked out, and everyone feels that way, but there is a level of what we do that sometimes I think is intense in that way. So mm-hmm. I think it makes sense. What is your go-to emotion?
I love happiness and joy.
And what is one of your favorite movies?
Howard's End, Merchant Ivory, Howard's End. It was beautiful and sumptuous visually and
yes.
about relationships.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I wouldn't have expected that from
really?
You. I like that. Well, that pretty much wraps up our show. Thank you so much for listening to Love with Kim Sage today on KX at One Laguna. The show airs every Tuesday at 1 p.m., and I hope you guys will keep joining me. You can always contact me on my webpage at www.kimsage.com or tweet questions or show ideas to at K-Sage Psychology. That's K-S-A-G-E Psychology. And I'd like to thank my beautiful and wonderful special guest, Janine Nicole, for joining me today. You can reach her at 949-872-9368. That's again 949-872-9368. Thank you so much for joining me, Janine.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. Thank you.
You're so welcome. And just thanks again to everyone. I hope you guys have a beautiful day. And, you know, just remember as you walk out into the world and have those difficult moments that at the end of the day, everyone just wants to be seen, heard, and loved. Mm.
Put your makeup on, get your nails done, curl your hair, run the extra mile, keep it slim so they like you. Do they like you? Get your sexy on, don't be shy, girl, take it off. This is what you want, to belong. So they like you. Do you like you? You don't have to try so hard. You don't have to give it all away. You just have to get up, get up, get up, get up. You don't have to change a single thing. You don't have to try, 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 try. You don't have to try, 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 try.
Up to date Orange County news on KX at 1 Laguna. Now.
Retiring Police Chief Paul Workman cracks open the case files on his department's early days in a Laguna Beach Historical Society presentation tonight at 7:30 p.m. at City Hall.